I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Derek.
And I'm Ray.
I'm Alex Reed.
Welcome back to another episode of
Mostly Lit.
And welcome back to another episode of Mostly Lit. I can't do the normal like name introductions because of this our new music.
Do you know what I think we should do? We should play the music and then start the introduction because we can't hear it. It's like when we're starting, it's a bit, do you know what I mean?
I don't think it's that deep. Just start the show.
I think we should just play it in the background.
I actually don't.
All right, guys, can we just continue? Thank you. Yeah, guys, welcome back to another episode. I don't know what that was. That was a blooper. Oh my God, we should release.
It took us a while to get here.
Mostly Lit bloopers.
Mostly Lit is a blooper.
For
the
real.
Entire episode is
for real.
That's true.
The stuff we show you.
Exactly. Yeah, I know, the things we do for you guys. Anyways, welcome back to the show. We have a special guest on here today.
We do.
Would our special guest love to introduce themselves?
Hello. This is an entire privilege. This is wonderful.
Thank you.
This is Guy Gunaratne.
Hello, Guy.
Thank you. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for asking me.
All right, it's fine.
It's fine. We love you because we love you on Twitter.
Yeah.
All right, it's nice to finally meet.
Yeah, thank you for standing for us.
Of course.
We stand for you like
it's a legit stan.
Yeah?
In the house. Yeah, no, for sure. You guys don't understand.
Yeah.
This is fun. It's be great. So, I know it's sound like it. I'm like, yeah, it's going
to
be fun.
I need you to step up your vim just a little bit.
Vim's here.
Oh, yeah, all right. Hey, I'm here. We go.
Good.
Thank you. Now we're at the most lit standard. But yeah, guys, how's your week's been?
Week's been good.
Yeah.
London Book Fair this week.
Oh, yes.
Shout out to Orna. That's what I want to say.
Oh, my God. Shout out to Orna.
So I spoke on Monday at Quantum on the panel talking about discoverability of books alongside for BookBub.
Mm-hmm.
That was really dope.
Yeah.
And then Ray was
so
doing something.
I judged the UK Blogger Awards.
Oh, did you?
This was like a few weeks
back. The Book Blogger Awards.
Blogger. So it was like Instagram.
I didn't know about
they're that. Amazing. I didn't really.
You guys are doing bits, you're just not showing anymore.
You're the ones that's always like,
I can't make it.
Anyway, so I did that, and those awards were they were released on Thursday.
Yeah,
unfortunately,
yeah.
I wasn't there because I was at work, but you know, congratulations to the winner. It was between YouTube, Actual Blogger, and Instagram, and I really enjoyed the Instagram one because the guy who won, this amazing Saudi guy who posts incredible pictures. I'll try and find the at and like put him somewhere in our description or whatever, but you guys should really go and follow him. He's absolutely incredible. And in my head, like, we're together.
Yeah.
I knew that was coming.
Yeah.
I was just waiting for it.
Yeah. Yeah. He's
when will you marry?
That's my MCM. My book MCM.
Yeah.
But yeah, so how about you, Derek? How's your week?
Oh, it's been all right still. I was supposed to go to book fair as well, but obviously I had some
pressing things to attend to.
Yeah, like my job, so I didn't get a chance to. Well, I went last year, which was it was good. So I mean, I feel like once I've been, unless I'm doing like an event or something, I don't really need to be there.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what
I mean?
So yeah, just that. And what else did I do? Oh my God, remember Was it last Sunday we went to that Marvel thing?
Yes.
Oh my God, yes. Okay, guys. All right, you know what? Derek, take this for a bit. You can take, what? Just explain what it was.
It was good. It was a lot of fun. So they showed like 30 minutes of the movie.
20.
Oh, was it 20 minutes?
Yeah.
Oh, right, okay. Well, okay, they showed 20 minutes of the movie and it's just so sick. I can't wait. I've been dreaming about Thanos for the past 2 days. I don't know why.
Okay, so you're a mess.
It's really weird. I keep dreaming about him. I don't know why.
That's not right.
I don't know. Anyway, so I really can't wait to watch the movie. Like, okay. I've already booked 3 tickets. So I've booked the midnight screening, then another afternoon screening the next day, then an evening screening the day after that. So
it's a lot.
It is a lot.
That's a lot of stuff.
It is. I was hoping they were gonna do like a marathon with every single one movie, but I don't think they will. They did it when they led up to Age of Ultron, but I didn't get to go.
Okay.
I thought I was gonna do it now, but maybe it's just too many movies. Yeah.
It's too many.
It'll be like 3 days.
Yeah. I'm really excited. I love that we got to sort of see all of the different Avengers, not all of them, but some of the Avengers.
Yeah, that were there.
And
I'm totally in love with Vision. His suit was just so amazing. And he's got this, like, you know, that aristocratic upper class confidence that you can only get from being rich. that, you know.
But doesn't he and Cumberbatch and Hiddleston have that?
Yeah. Cumberbatch had that in Bucket Log. Yeah, he really walked out like, this is my house.
He literally put his arms out. He walked out like, this is my house.
Yeah,
as in, I rule. And it's that confidence that a lot of people have that I'm trying to make sure all my children have.
Do you know who stole it? The Letitia Wright came out.
Amazing.
And she was just like,
very confident. Isn't
she's very confident. Like,
yeah, she owns it.
She owned the stage.
Yeah, man. She's got a lot happening, man. Yeah. But yeah, that was an amazing week.
Yeah.
What else happened?
Oh, thank you, Disney.
Thank you, Disney, for that. That was amazing. What else happened?
Okay.
Oh, so, yeah. We've been nominated for the British Podcast Award.
Oh, yes. Thank you so much. Shout out to Derek.
Why shouting out me?
Because, you know, I feel like you're
the one. Oh, because I sorted it all out. Oh, yeah. No worries, guys. You know. It's normal.
You put us forward.
if I throw something at your head. Yeah. Yeah, that was good. Thank you so much for that.
And don't forget to vote for
please,
us.
Please,
the Listener's Choice Awards.
Yeah.
So if
yeah,
you go,
please go on mostly dashlit.com to go and vote because there's a link there. Please do that. We try our best. So we hope that we give you.
You know, we're just three little people doing this all by ourselves. You know.
Four people.
Clarissa was like, oh, no, you did not.
Excuse me.
I beg your pardon.
Excuse me, first of all. One more thing. Thank you to the bookseller. Thank you, Phil. And because.
Man, like Philip.
Yeah, man, mentioning us in this week's.
Shout out to Philip, man. And his team.
Undying support is.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, there's loads
much appreciated. Anyway, go on, Ray.
Thank you, finally. Anyways, I forgot that last night, when this comes out, it'll be like the Friday. I was a panel at London Book and Screen Week, and they had a showing of Suffragette the movie, and it was about sort of celebrating 100 years of certain women above 30 getting the vote, because I have to say certain women because not all women got it. I had the pleasure of being on the panel with Helen Pankhurst, Marie and Marie Elsa Bragg, and it was so nice. I was sat there like little old me, because obviously I was the youngest on the panel, so I was I was actually nervous. Normally I'm not really nervous. Mm. You only do live shows and I get a little of a bubble.
Yeah.
Mm. But it goes. But I was legit nervous.
Oh, right.
It was so weird.
Mm. The quality of the conversation was good, though.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was just amazing. And the director of, I think it was the London Book Fair, was there. And she was absolutely incredible. Orna was there. Like, I absolutely love her.
Good.
She's incredible. So thank you so much for having me. And looking forward to doing many other things.
How's your week been, Guy?
Yeah.
Guys, just been like, okay, I'm tired.
I mean, no. It's been busy. It is just busy, is what it is. But stuff like this is a privilege. It's fun.
Yeah.
But it's just a lot of traveling, because I'm in between Sweden and London now. This week I had to fly in, but then Ryanair flying was not great. But it's just one thing after the other. Mm. It's a good publicist, so it's like I've got a lot on for next week.
What's Sweden
tomorrow.
Like?
It's nice.
I just feel like the air quality is much better there.
Air quality and water is so much, like tap water, it's like Evian.
Nice.
And everyone's attractive.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yes, it's everyone.
So you just fit right in, right?
I mean...
That was a compliment, thank you.
No, I mean, literally, that's why I moved there. Like, why would I...
Why would you be a part of this?
Oh, Ray couldn't help.
I couldn't. I'm so sorry. You know when things present themselves and you're just like, well, I'm just giving the people what they want.
Okay. I wanted it, Ray.
Thank you.
It's great. And it's also away from all the hoopla. So, like, I can actually write over there.
Yeah. Away from Mad and Furious City.
Two. Yeah. Ooh. No, I'm not. It's another book. But, like, it's good that it's away from all of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was trying to finish it before all of this happened, but that didn't happen.
Oh, okay.
So now it's a lot of this and not writing and then going back there and having a good two months worth of writing.
Could you just say to your publicist, I'm not doing anything else until I finish this book?
You don't know my publicist, man. Right. No, can't do that. That's not allowed.
Yeah. That's good. There's things to do.
Yeah.
Right, so what's everyone reading?
So I'm reading this week. I'm still reading. I went through Kayo Chingoni's Kumukanda. He's got a collection of poems.
That's
lovely.
Did I say it wrong?
No, it's the first part of that word is a dirty word in Swahili. So.
Anyway, Alex, continue, please.
It's a good collection. I love that collection.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I haven't read it yet.
No, like, there are some real good like poems in here. Mm. And he writes really well, and like he paints the pictures very clearly, and it's really nice. It was a really nice read. I was reading some of the poems on the way here, and it was like really good. So I would say, you know, guys, try and go out and, you know, pick up his book. So that's Chayo Chingoni's book. He's a really nice guy as well. So
okay,
are you reading, Derek?
I'm back on my Northguard ship.
Oh God, here it goes. I'm dark. So I've gone. Yeah,
well, it's not that dark. It actually is. The thing is, like, I started reading and I stopped. Like 200 pages in, I'm going back to start reading it again. I've obviously had to start from the beginning, which I don't mind because it's really, there's something really like therapeutic about reading his writing. It's like, it's so boring, but it's not, it's so strange. It's a weird thing to read.
There's nothing remarkable.
But there is though, because he's a clever guy. He can really capture a moment when he's talking about his father and the little things that happen between him and his father that establish a relationship. It's like a little moment he will establish a relationship and then it just fizzles and just disappears after that moment. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And he really does that really, really well in here.
Mm-hmm.
The way he talks about death as well, I really like. The way there's a couple bits where he's talking about his kids and his family. Sometimes he's just too honest. So he talks about a bit where he's shaking his daughter and I'm just like, that's a bit mad. Like, what are you doing?
Mm.
But anyway.
It's funny, I had the same experience. I read it, yeah. Got halfway through, just dropped it, knowing that there was something there.
Yeah,
I drew it back, and I thought. And every time someone asked me about it, it's kind of boring. Nothing happens.
Yeah,
but everything happens in the moment. But like, I went back, and it is worth finishing. And it's one of those ones where you don't really know how to explain it, but afterwards, there's certain moments that have just stayed with me forever.
Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely. So that's why I'm really like. So I mean, once I've done this, I'm going to try my hardest to just get through all of the series. Mm. I think there's one. There's six. There's one that's due to be released, I think, sometime this year. Mm. And then obviously he's written the Seasons Quartet or whatever, which I'm going to try and read as well.
Okay.
It sounds so boring, and I just don't.
I think you will like it.
I will never pick it up.
I think you'll like it actually,
because the cover's boring.
I don't think it's Ray's kind of book. I'd read it.
The type of writing sounds boring. The way you talk about it sounds boring. I don't know. Like, I'm just like,
it's not for everyone. It's true.
Yeah, I guess it's not for everyone. Yeah, I guess so. Mm. Yeah, but it's great. I like it.
Cool.
I think it's great. That's what I'm reading at the moment.
Okay.
So I
obviously I told you guys that I started Leslie Nekarima's What It Means When a Man Falls.
I didn't
want to
hear praise from you.
Mind your business.
I don't want to hear anything.
So I think she is an absolutely incredible writer. Mm-hmm. She's magical in the way she writes, but it's like there's this intersection that she does. What she does really well is to make the dream, imaginary, magical, the old oral traditional storytelling, puts it in one little box and just does something incredible with it. So I think she's absolutely amazing in the way she does that. The only criticism I would say is that it's a little bit hard to get into her writing because it doesn't give you time to get used to the magic, right? It doesn't say, oh, let me bring you in very slowly. It's like you're inside. That's it.
It's short stories, though.
And this is why I said that short stories. This is what I like about them.
Okay, that's I'm not saying that was
what a short story is.
Well, no, because I read other things that weren't like that. It's not every one of her stories that are like that. There are some that are like that, and I'm not a fan of that.
How many of those stories? How many of the stories?
What's your
in the
issue?
Collection?
Like, it's, no, still, it's the way I'm not coming for her. I'm saying she. I literally feel like she does something with writing that I have not seen many writers capable of doing. I'm not going to justify her to you because it's about how she comes to me. Okay, so mind your business.
But it's a short story, so you're criticizing a short story.
I am
doing a short story.
I am. Okay. It's not about that because some of them are great. It's just that it's a little. It's not even. It doesn't take time to get into it. It's just there's something there, and you have to unlock your brain in a specific type of way to really embed yourself in the narrative. And once you've done that, everything flows. But to when a lot of the times I go into something and I want to find meaning straight away. Is it a metaphor here? Like, what are you doing? But it's because she doesn't give me that straight away that there's this nervousness that I go into a story that, okay, God, what is this one going to be? But even then I'm saying that and I'm like, that's actually a really good technique to use. So
I was just about to say, it sounds wonderful to
me. Like writing wise, beautiful, magical. It's not, I don't think there's a clarity to her writing like other people. That's why I think you won't really like it, Derek, because I think you like clarity in writing.
Not necessarily,
and this
man.
Is not what you'll get from her.
Nah, it's not. I don't know where this assumption comes from.
Or maybe the books that you've told me to read, I'm like, the writing is very clear, almost clinical. And this is not that.
That's because I assume that's what you like, so I always recommend those kind of books to you.
No, I mean, I don't mind them, but I like a bit of flair sometimes.
Jose Saramago, I can recommend his books.
But you have, I read
the... But she doesn't like that.
I read the short, the tiny short one.
No, I didn't recommend that one.
Did you? No, you
I recommend
it.
The double and...
I probably would like it.
The Gospel According to...
No, that's... Oh, okay. Jesus. I thought you were going to say The Gospel According to
Jesus.
King.
Yes, Jesus, Alex, but I'm English, then, mate. So
yeah, but if you're, but the thing is, Jesus is Jesus and Jesus is would be us. Anyway.
No, but it's okay. He's not talking about Jesus. Okay. The story is actually about Jesus.
Okay, it's fine.
Coming to correct me, you don't even know what the novel's
does
about.
Does he speak fluent Spanish though?
I think Sarah Maggles.
No, does Alex speak fluent Spanish? He's coming with this.
What are you reading? What are you reading this
anyway,
week?
Anyway, guy, what are you reading?
Oh man, I just want that to keep going. You know what's funny? I'm obliged to read books now that I wouldn't normally turn to. No, because I'm with. Like on panels with other writers, and so, but it's good because I'm exposed to books that I wouldn't normally pick up, but it turns out I like them. So there's a couple, Charlene Theo's Ponty, which it's coming out the same day as mine next Thursday.
Yeah, I read that. Yes,
you know what's mad? So people think that that must be a problem.
Yeah,
I said no. Although plus I met her as well.
Okay,
and the book's a lot like her.
She's supposed to be really quirky, isn't she?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like irreverent and funny, both the book and her. But like, it's just, it's fun. It's also a book I wouldn't normally pick up. So I'm glad. I'm trying to finish it for tomorrow. And the other one is completely the other side of it. Also good. It's called Testament by Kim Sherwood. I'm doing an event with her next week.
Yeah.
It's about memory, about a grandfather who kind of did a march from a concentration camp during the war, and how he came to England, and how his granddaughter just sort of like traces back his story, which is beautiful and it's great. And also finishing off Atrib by Eddie Williams. Mm-hmm. Short stories, they're incredible.
Yeah. That's
they're amazing.
Influx Press, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It won like the Republic of Consciousness Prize a couple weeks ago, and it's worth it. It's all the buzz is super worth it. And it's playful, and she seemed like she had fun writing it. It's about love. What's not to love?
Okay.
It's good. Love. It's fun. Yeah.
Can I just ask, how do publishers determine what date a book gets published on? Like, is it just in a random date that's set?
I'm sure there's a lot of thought behind it. I don't know. Like,
is it your book? Or is it something like special about this?
No,
date?
Mine was actually pushed up. So there is.
Yeah.
So mine was originally 3rd of May, but they got pushed up to 19th of April because W.H. Smith put me on a fresh talent thing.
Yeah.
And so they moved up. Mm. So there's a bunch of those things that are changeable and. You know,
anything
comes
that
into
would
it.
Impact sales as well, so that'd be good.
But again, search me. I don't really know how they think.
Okay, cool. So, Derek, do you have a gem this week?
Do you have a gem this week?
Oh, unfortunately, I don't have a gem this week.
Okay.
Oh. Sorry, guys. It's hard out here, man. It's tough to keep mining. Because
we don't want to hear your woes.
No, I'm just saying. No,
Bring the gem each week.
I was going to say mining like my memory for kind of books that I've read that I thought, wow, they're worthy of being called gems.
I guess.
It's quite difficult, especially when I haven't been keeping up to date with my Goodreads account. Yeah. I can't go back and say, oh, I read this, or I remember.
Yeah.
It's difficult now. So, yeah. Hopefully, I'll have one next week.
Inshallah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Anyway. Okay, so we're going to move on to Messy Lit. Then we have a guy, Gunaratna, here. Hey. And obviously, so he's the author of his new book. Is it In Our Mad and Furious City or Mad in, and, Our Mad and Furious City?
It's In Our Mad and Furious City.
So he's got author of In Our Mad and Furious City. And, you know, we've been chatting to him about that book. So what was the process of writing the book? Where did the story come from? Like,
I don't know. It's been simmering for a while to write something set in the place I grew up, but just the themes in it are quite dark. But I wanted to sort of, I don't know, explore that a bit. And it's tough because it's all, I feel weird because it always sounds like a downer when I talk about it. So preparing you. So I mean, I think like it was around 2013 when the germ was kind of. Seed, and I think it was down. It came from the killing of Lee Rigby. Do you remember this? Like,
yeah.
It was like two radicalized guys who kind of saw him, stalked him for a bit, and then killed him in Woolwich. And it was something about that event, because I don't know if you remember, there was a video that came out afterwards where some brave woman walked up to him just after it happened, like the killer, Michael de Blasio, and videoed him talking about his motives behind it. And it was like holding a knife and stuff. It was horrible.
Yeah. Talking about remove your government and
all this stuff.
All that kind of stuff.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, what shocked me most was the fact that, like, he was speaking road dialect, like, he was wearing a tracksuit. He looked like a guy who went to my school.
Yeah.
Like, anyone, like, someone on road. So that was way too close to comfort. Mm. And there was something about like that, like it cast my mind back to like when I was at school, there'd be opinions flying around like when 9/11 happened and stuff, but not in for a second back then at school did I think that someone like me growing up here would ever like do something like that or like jump in a van and like run people down and stuff. That stuff just doesn't come into my head, but something's happened between then and now.
Yeah.
Where every young man, like every time this something like this happens, it's a young man who was born here, and somehow was radicalized and they do what they do. So, but thing is, what's not interesting for me is like to write a book about a portrait about a person like that. It's more interesting to like think about extremism in a very humanistic way. Mm. So the book itself is sort of takes that initial concern and sort of splinters it into five different voices and sort of like think about like how we are affected by extremism and like that proximity to violence in London, which is an extreme city. So extremism in different ways, in fanaticism for music, like creativity, and extremism in different senses, in violence also, but you know, sexuality, like things like that that are interesting. But so look like it's sort of like refracting it into different voices and exploring how that works, not looking for answers or anything political per se, but like thinking about extremism and violence in it in a different way.
See, that's really interesting because obviously where I grew up, like, you know, you'd hear about stabbings and this happened to that person and whatnot, but then there was something, and it's kind of like if someone came up to me and said, oh, this guy got stabbed the other day and, you know, he's in hospital, he's dying and whatnot, I'd kind of be like, oh, wow, that's a bit mad. But the political nature of the Lee Rigby killing, there was something really disturbing about it.
Mm.
But I've been hearing about people getting stabbed and all that for a long time. And, you know, of course, a lot of those stabbings are political in a sense because they're like, you know, post-Cold Wars and all that kind of thing. But yeah, there was something really disturbing about that. And you're right, when I was watching the video and you're just like, wow, this guy is actually from ENDS.
Yeah, the way he carried himself. You've seen that.
Yeah,
like,
and it's... Yeah, exactly. You're just like, right, it's very, very... There's something really mad about it. I know exactly what you're saying, yeah.
Did it look like he was on the edge of psychosis?
Yeah, he's... Yeah.
Yeah, it did look...
I think it's because you saw it and a lot of things you just hear about it or you see like a Like when I go back home, I'll see the police. If something has happened, I'll see the police surrounding an area. It's been like cordoned off. And you're just like, okay, cool, something happened. But this was like in your face.
Yeah.
Couldn't get away from it. Yeah. And it wasn't like a reporter telling you. It was the guy who did it.
What was the impact of the title? Where did that come from?
In Our Mad and
Furious City.
Great title.
It's so impactful.
No, I'm glad. I had to make sure that it kept it stayed that way.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Like, you know, one of the things I'm excited to talk to you lot about is because because I remember a couple, this is my stand coming out, you know, a couple of episodes back, you were talking about road narratives.
Yeah.
And that was not the kind of books or films that I kind of resonated with. I was more into, I don't know, like books that no one my age would ever read. So when it came to writing a thing set in the area and experiences that I was sort of accustomed to, I wanted to give a title that wasn't the same as everything else. Like, so when I went to the publisher, one of the suggestions was like, should we shorten it to Furious City?
Mm.
And I was like, anyone can write that book. Anyone can write a Furious City. Mm. Only I could write In Our Mad and Furious City.
Yeah.
Because I'm from there, but I also grew up reading books with flighty titles. Yeah. So like, I'm going to meld those two.
Yeah.
So, you know, it gives a poetry that I think the book has.
I really like
I don't know. That was the intention.
No, I think you pulled it off, and I think with the road narrative sort of thing, like obviously when I first started reading the book, the first thing that kind of struck me straight away, like not to give any spoilers away or anything, was just kind of it was almost too real. Do you know what I mean?
It was raw.
Yeah, it was kind of like, I know because you said it's dark, you know, and I'm kind of like, by nature, I'm very into that kind of thing anyway. But there was something really... Don't kiss your teeth. There was something like really... I don't know what it was, but I was... It got me in... It put me in a certain mood, a certain mold. Do you know what I mean?
Was it like coming home?
No, it wasn't like coming home. I don't know how to explain. It's difficult to explain.
It felt...
But the fact that it did that instantly is, of course, it's a good thing because it drew me in straight away and everything was recognizable to me straight away. Do you know what I mean?
I felt like I was literally there with them because obviously it's in a familiar area as well, and just being growing up around those kind of people and just those cultures and all these different things, I felt like I was definitely a part of the story.
What they're saying is you write really, really well.
Yeah, you write well.
I'm grateful.
Like, and I did feel like I was a part of the story. Like I was like walking with these characters, and it was amazing. That's the way I felt. That's the way I felt when it came to it. I don't want to talk for either of you, but that's kind of what I was experiencing.
What it really brought to mind to me was just kind of like, in sometimes you've got people like they've literally like just come from mosque or something.
Yeah.
And they're roadman though.
Yeah.
You're chatting to them, but you don't expect it, but they're talking to you like they're real goons, bro. And they've just come from mosque and they're wearing their full khamis and stuff. Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it was. Like,
you captured that word.
Yeah,
that
like, was, like on Fridays, and they used to like all surround Ealing Road down in Wembley and stuff. And then like, it's always used to be, I remember even at school, there was a lot of kids that used to be like kids, these guys in my year, who used to be like, oh yeah, man, you're going mosque today.
Yeah, yeah.
And I used to be like,
not even the mosque, it's going mosque.
You're going mosque. Like, yeah. Oh yeah, nobody says you're going to the mosque.
No one says this.
I've never said that.
And then, like,
I had to explain this to the editor.
Really?
No, because why are there no thes?
That's true, you're just saying go mosque.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
But no, that's just the vernacular stuff. But again, it's one of those things where, like, at some point, you know, you start off, there is zero expectations on it being published, which I think is a good thing. If you can write with honesty and just freedom. So it's just uncompromising. You're writing exactly how you hear it. And you don't give a damn if it goes over some people's heads. Because I've read enough books about posh boys in boarding school where half that stuff is just I don't know what those references are. So why not?
Did you when you started writing, or like the first time you sat down, did you envision it being a story, or was it you were just writing was it a part of a bigger picture, or
it was always going to be multiple narratives? Yeah. Although the first draft was always, it was third person.
Yeah.
And then for a bunch of reasons, I turned it into first, because it felt like it needed to be if it's going to be that kind of book. But yeah, no, like it. What was the question?
When you started writing, was there like a bigger picture involved that this was going to become a novel, or were you just like,
no, for sure it was
going to
be a novel.
Yeah.
For sure it was going to be a novel. But the first draft is always very, like, at least for me, and I realize this is very different for different writers. It was very, very intuitive. Like, it was writing, and halfway through names would change, and I'm like, I don't care, I'll fix it later.
Yeah.
And I'll keep going until it's done. It was just word count. So the first draft is garbage, but and a mess. Mm. But in your head, you know those certain things will make sense. Eventually, you just have to have that confidence to know, like, eventually this will turn into something that isn't disgusting.
Mm. Yeah.
And I'm not, like, hating myself for. So, you know, but then it turns out a couple years down the line, that works out.
How long were you writing it for?
I forget. Like, I think, because I had a job. So.
job.
So a couple of years, like, I would say 4 years, and another year with my editor.
Mm.
My agent first did some editing, and then my editor once I got a publisher.
So when you submitted to the BAME short story competition, were you already in the process of writing
this book? Finished it.
Oh, you had finished
that. That prize was fundamental, but it was really good timing. Mm. So I had just finished, and I was about to send it out to agents. And when that came out, I was like, "Oh, sweet! I'll just submit that, and I'll wait to submit the novel, because if I get shortlisted, hopefully that'll bring me up like above to register." So
You were.
It totally worked. I had the novel ready, at least ready enough to send to agents. Because before that, I had a bunch of close readers read it first and tell me if it sucked or not. And then when The Guardian Fourth Estate Short Story Praise came along, he did a way easier title for this, by the way, just FYI, because I know Alex is on the board. But so when that came up, I was like, okay, I'll submit a short story and wait, because I know, okay, it'll might be easier. But then when I did get shortlisted, straight away, like, the subject header for every email is like, Guardian Fourth Estate shortlisted, prize, here's my novel. And it totally worked. A couple of agents came back.
Okay.
What was the hardest part about writing it then? What were the challenges, and how'd you overcome them?
This is a good 4 years ago, Ray.
I'm sorry. I need you to look deep.
Like, back.
Go deep.
I'll go deep. I'll go deep. I'm just talking, man. This is not me. This is you lot spinning.
You know, I mean, I could go, you know.
I didn't realize what I was saying until I realized, and I was like, okay.
Anyway.
That was a very resplendent sigh, Derek. Huh?
Resplendent. We're a mess.
I'm
okay.
Sorry, we've all got giggles today.
Sorry.
I think, you know what the difficult, the most difficult part was just maintaining that sense of, like, not honestly caring if it gets published, because that's a weird thing to think. Like, you're not thinking of an audience, you're not thinking about someone, or you're not trying to second guess a reception, you know what I mean? So, like, you, because that keeps you, I don't know, because you
humble.
Yeah, no, not humble. It's more like you have to write with a sense of, like,
keeps you creative, doesn't it?
Yeah, it keeps you keeps you fearless in that when you have to go to certain areas when you feel slightly uncomfortable, the worst thing is to think, oh, my mom's gonna read this,
right?
You know what I mean? Or someone's gonna read this, or someone with this, like, sensibility is gonna read this.
Mm-mm.
Will they like this? It's already happened now. Like, now I've maintained, like, not reading any reviews, but I've overheard certain things said. Like, one time someone said that this book is like an exercise in empathy, and I'm like, oh, I like that. And then weeks later, I'd be writing my next book and it wasn't working, and I was thinking, am I being empathic enough? Because I did it well last time, and then I thought, no.
Yeah, you don't want
this. It's ruined. It's poison. Yeah. But that's the hardest thing. And now it's, like, even harder, because I'm trying to recreate that sense of, I don't know it's going to be published, because I know this is going to be published.
Yeah.
So it's harder now.
Yeah.
So what about the slang?
I was just about to ask that question.
Did you find that difficult? Did you write something and then second guess yourself and say, would someone is that authentic, or did it just come out like, I know this is how a man talks, so let me just
Straight away, this idea of authenticity is bullshit. Like, I feel like that it's like I don't think authenticity means what people think it means anymore. Like, it's a marketing thing, because it's kind of like, if you want to be authentic, you got to buy these trainers then, or if you want to be the real you, then you got to wear this. Yeah. Like, so that's what it means. So authentic, like, right now, it was more important for it to have this right rhythm and energy, because the words can be, that's why it's like, there's a reason why in it is spelled differently. Like that's how it act genuinely sounds like to me, with E's, not I's. I've never said in it in my life.
Yeah.
I've said in it.
Yeah.
So those things are way more important to me than like how other people perceive authenticity. I feel like, okay, no, this feels right. And it has its internal logic. In each voice, it has its own internal internalities. So that was more important. So it made more sense in the book if it made sense in the book rather than real life, if that makes sense.
So when you're going through the editing process, did your editor ever change a word and you was like, no, it's supposed to be spelled like that?
Derek's asking all my questions.
Oh, you're going to ask that as well?
Tons.
Sorry.
Yeah. No, it's not in. Loads of times. Yeah. But this is the most amazing thing is, like, of course, after the book's done, I'm thinking, okay, this kind of person would read it. This person, like someone like me, someone like you guys would read this kind of book. But what's crazy is, if you go to like these publishing meetings, they're like middle class white women most of the time, but they love the book, which is mind blowing to me. So my editor was this really sweet lady, and so she when she reads it, it resonates with her in a way different way that I can't even envisage. That kind of thing, she just trusts that is true. And these people do live in London. They've overheard this on buses. They know what it sounds like. They just aren't
part of the world.
Yeah, so that's down to me to make sure that those kind of things. So yeah, but you know, there were loads of those
but
questions.
But then their edits won't be as authentic as your demands not to edit. Because I guess your job in that sense is telling them or teaching them about the world of your story. If they go about questioning it.
Yeah, I mean, there's certain, I don't know, but it was usually, let me think of an example. There was one, it was just, you know, just making sure, like, is it chirpsing or chirping? Stuff like that. And I'm like, no, it's definitely chirpsing. It's definitely.
Yeah.
Ray had to second guess for a second. Is it chirping?
No, this is why it was brought up, because I'm like, I've heard chirping.
You need to shut your mouth, Derek. I don't know why you do this. You don't even live in ends.
You're proper thinking, like.
Oh, God. I don't live in ends. Oh, God. Anyway, sorry, Alex. I asked two of your questions.
No, they do know, like, it was warranted. I was actually going to ask just a general question then. Mm. Like, what was it like for you guys growing up in those spaces? Like, what were the few key things that you guys can pull out of those? Of those memories.
Do you know what? It's hard.
From the bus routes to the chicken shop.
I mean, we can describe, like, it's funny. I was talking to Robin Travis about this, and you can describe what you were seeing around you. But he was just like, if you go up to like a 17-year-old now and say, what are you feeling at the moment? They won't be able to tell you. So it's always, and I feel like when we look at it in hindsight, we probably always get it wrong, because we're, you know, applying how we feel and see the world now and, you know, slapping it onto what we think it was like then.
Yeah.
So I think it's really hard. I mean, yeah, like
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I can describe, oh, we used to do this and this, that. But if you ask me how I felt about those things, I wouldn't be able to tell you. And I probably wouldn't have been able to tell you then either. So it's really, it really made me think, like, the way I'm seeing ends and how it was and how it is now, is that actually right? Do you get what I'm saying?
Mm.
So I'm going off on a tangent here. I was going to say, like, one thing that we should actually really start doing is trying to help, like, these, like, people in ends to express themselves, because only they can tell us. Do you know what I mean? And if they're telling us, like, when they're 25, it's too late. They need to be able to tell us when they're, like, 13, 14,
just
15.
Youth culture in general.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, exactly. We need to somehow be able to extract it from them and then know what it's like growing up in ends. Do you know what I mean?
Because
we can sit and talk about Keisha the Skit, Chicken, and all of those kind of them things. Yeah. There, you know what I mean? So, sorry, but I've just gone off on some next thing.
Right?
I don't know. I disagree. I think you can talk about it how it was then. Obviously, memories will always fade and you'll always miss certain parts, but there's this particular essence of your childhood that will remain, I think, quite true. And especially when you grew up in those areas, I can explain to you how I felt when I'd have to go and wait for the W11 bus. I knew where my seat was, do you know what I mean? And I knew the conversations I would have, like, at the back of the bus with my friends.
Sorry, sorry, I should have clarified. This was specific to, like, the troubled youths. That's what I meant, not like just regular going about. I mean in terms of the ones who are really going through some emotional turbulence.
But I get that we were all going through emotional turbulence. There's obviously some to greater than others, but I think we all can kind of
reflect on it
and there is an honesty to it that obviously as I'm saying, time does mean that you miss out a few things.
Yeah,
but
I mean that's kind of what Derek. I guess that's kind of what.
No, because you're saying like, oh, you know, you look at things differently with this different type of lens now that you're a certain way, and how those lenses. No, but I mean that's how maybe you do it. You know what I mean? But I personally feel
like memory does fade. You will see. I don't know, guys.
Like unjust to your own memories.
No.
But that's just me. Like, you know, you can treat your own memories how you want. Like,
yeah.
But that's just how I feel about what I went through. Like,
before I say my point, then, Guy, what do you think about when you were growing up, what were the key things that kind of stuck out to you?
I don't know, man. Do you mean just like Brent Cross? But do you mean like as just a regular civilian person, or do you mean like as someone who wants to render those memories in a book, like as a writer, or me, or as a person? Because as a person, so
Derek took this perspective of like the young people troubled, but like what was it like for you growing up? Did you feel like if you can remember, did you feel troubled then? Did you feel like it was that there was something creeping up, that there was a huge intensity around being a young person then? And did that affect your experience growing up in London?
100%. I think it's just, I don't know, I think everyone, whether they like it or not, would have like a complex relationship from the place they're from. Whether you're from Ennis or not, like if you're from like a city outside London in Southeast Asia, they're intense places, and I think that's always going to be part of your identity. But I think for me personally, there was a sense that I'm in a shitty school, man. I know this for a fact. You know, like teachers don't care as much, and I'm sure other people, I'm pretty sure, are better educated right now. Yeah. Like I'm sitting here and I know this sucks.
Yeah.
And the teacher knows it sucks. And we're just fending for ourselves. That school I went to is closed down now for a bunch of reasons.
Yeah.
So those kind of things, like, you know, but there's two conclusions you can draw, like two ways you can go with that sort of acceptance. You can either like, that could either affect your self-worth to the point where you're like, maybe I deserve this. Maybe where I'm at is where I'm supposed to be. And therefore that's my lot in life. And I'll just accept that and just get a retail job somewhere. Or you can go, okay, no, this is, I'm going to use this then. I'm going to turn that into something.
But I think those two decisions rely on different types of stimuluses. It's not, I think it's not just that person that has to make that decision. It's various things that interact for them to think, this is all I'm going to be. And or maybe I could have more. And that could have more is about, I think, some parts your own, but some parts maybe family, things that you see that you want to aspire to. And so, yeah, those decisions are so hard, especially for a child to make.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, to know that there could be something more.
Yeah, because, no, for
you
sure.
Know, you might not know.
I always find it difficult to, you know, the fact that, you know, you spent so much time with some people at school. You spent so much time with all these quote unquote friends that you have. And then you get to a point where you no longer, where you, where all your paths just diverge. Because you know what? You're like, these guys are your immediate friends for like the best part of 5 to 7 years.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? And if you went to primary school with them, that's even more. And then as soon as you, like, all the things that show up within the school system, and then obviously external factors, personality, everyone's growing, and then it just becomes a thing where you just all splat out, and then you look at yourself and you think, wow, I mean, we were good friends then, like we were actually friends, and then all of a sudden now it's like we don't even speak. And I always find that just a weird factor of growing up. I always find
that weird. It's not, I don't think it's weird.
No, I always find that, like, I always find that strange, because then when you see them, like, you know, we live in social media age now. Like, I see people follow or message me and stuff, and I'm just like, this is weird. I've like spent a whole 10 years away from you as a person, and now just to continuously see you like message or pop up on my feed and whatnot, it feels strange.
Cause so there's, talk or, to them again.
There's
restart,
a part. But the thing, but like, there's sometimes you've just diverged. Like, there's some things that some place you've just diverged from them.
I disagree. Of course you can come back to it. Why not? Can't you?
If you live in the same area and it's not hard to communicate, I don't see why you wouldn't. But I think it's just because it's just you're in different environments, and it's effort, I guess.
I just look at it as a factor of growing up.
Like, what do you mean you're in different environments?
Like, you have particular types of friends now that you see every day. Like, I have friends that I see every day. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so for me, it will be like, effort to be it, like,
because then you have
Hey girl, do you want to meet up? Because I'm just so used to
just having friends that know you and have seen and have grown with you from a different,
like, I'm close with my uni friends because they've seen that growth, which is more immediate to like my school friends, you know what I mean? Although I still like see some of my school friends.
It's so weird because I would argue that the person who's grown up with you from age like 7 to 18 knows you a lot better than the people who grew up with you after you.
So my formative years, though, I think my formative, it depends. And I think my formative years were like 17 to like 21. That's what I feel like I've done the most growth. Whereas earlier, it's just childhood. Like, I don't think I knew myself then that much as the struggles that I dealt with during my formative years.
I don't know. I disagree. What do you think, Guy?
I don't know. I kind of do feel, I want to believe that, I don't think there's enough of you as a 28-year-old or whatever that was there when you were 17 for you to connect, to reconnect.
Right.
I agree. And I think we've put way too much stock on externalities, like where you are, what job you have and what you don't have. And you know, half of them also think that about you. You know, what do I have in common with that dude or girl? Like, I think at some point, if you ask, you know, find yourself with someone, the conversation will inevitably go beyond, oh, who'd you talk to, blah blah blah. At some point it'll turn into something real. Usually I've had conversations like this where it's like good half an hour of just bullshit, and then at some point
and then it gets serious.
Okay. No, I just thought it was a factor of growing up, but then yeah. isn't it? But
I don't
then,
think it's weird. It just happens. You make friends, you move on, and you make other friends, you move on. It's just
also,
a cycle. Yeah,
but there's also the value in reconnecting. That's kind of what I'm picking up
connecting.
From this. But yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
That's cool.
Okay.
All right, so we're going to move on to my section now, but that was great. I just want to say quickly, if you guys submit to the Fourth Estate Short Story Prize, I forgot to mention that at the beginning. It's fourthestate.co.uk/prize. I think that the deadline is in June, and yeah, it's 6,000 words PDF. So submit
it's
that.
Worth it.
And
it's worth it.
Yeah, and then like, you know, everything will be announced. The final winner will be announced by September. So go for it. I just wanted to ask quickly for my bit was just, so you guys, I've spoken about Osho before on this podcast. And I went to, there was a documentary called Wild Wild Country on
Who's
Netflix.
Osho again?
So Osho is...
The guy with the beard.
The guy with the beard. Remember? Do you remember? He wrote this book, Emotional Wellness, and I spoke about it.
All
said,
right.
And you said, yeah. But, so he wrote... He wrote all those books, those spirituality books and all these things. There's this documentary on a series on Netflix called Wild Wild Country, which is talking about Osho and about how his followers kind of developed a kind of a cult behind him. So I wanted to say, I was just thinking about it and I thought, like, you know, when you look up to, well, not look up, but when you hold somebody in such high esteem, what does that, how do you challenge that when they... when you know what they've done is so far out of whack for what they've actually for what they create and what they write or what they write or what they produce or all these kind of things. So
like Jesus,
similar. But like, so because he basically, the idea was like, he did this thing, he came to America, he had a team around him, and the team did create this huge following, and it had all these like these really weird followers who like doted on his ideologies, and he was silent for a whole 3 years when this was happening. Shit hit the fan. They bought up this a lot of land in Oregon State in the US. Shit hit the fan because the people in the local town didn't like it, and then it became worldwide news and they started to fight against it. People died, people almost died. Like, it just, everything started to turn in on itself. For more information, just watch the documentary. It's really cool. But and it just started making me thinking about all these different things. Like, we've had the Sabrina Claudio stuff that's happened on online. Obviously, she's a singer, and like, but she was doing really well until people remembered that she said really, you know, racist things against black women online. And then you've got, obviously, a larger extent, you've got the R. Kellys of this world. I just wanted to just ask, like, what do you guys, how do you guys, like, when, what people create and what they do outside of it, how do you marry that kind of connection? Do you completely cancel or shut people off? Do you still appreciate what they do but don't support it? Like, how do you
so you're really,
challenge
you're
that?
Really coming for this cancelled culture, basically.
I'm not coming, like I mean, I'm not even coming for it. I'm just questioning it because I just don't.
I mean, I think people can be completely wiped out of history. I mean, look at Hulk Hogan, that rant that he went on about his daughter dating a black guy or whatever.
Oh, really?
WWE have taken him out of the Hall of Fame. They've literally wiped him out of WWE history.
Like, I didn't even know about.
They're just like, we're not involved with, and this is Hulk Hogan. Like, he was the WWF. Do you know what I mean? So I think yeah, it's possible. There's, I mean, once a scandal comes out, right, like again, Jimmy Savile, he finished, like, no one's associating with him anymore. Do you know what I mean? R. Kelly should be exactly the same. I'm not fucking with R. Kelly. Like, I don't fuck with R. Kelly.
But you're not fucking with him in, obviously, with what he's got away with for so long. But does that mean you don't listen to his music?
I don't listen to his music.
You don't listen to his music. If it came out at a family event, you'd be like, I'll sit down.
Fam, when I was in uni, yeah, when Chris Brown used to come on, I used to go and sit down. Cause I was just like, I'm not fucking with this guy. Like, I weren't really, nah. Do you know what I mean?
But then does that include when you realise that your favourite is a racist, but you still stand for his book?
Who?
Anything.
If my favourite is a racist?
Yeah. And he's out there, like, doing da-da-da.
Or she.
So, for example, if I found out, like, someone like Fitzgerald, who was clearly held racist views. If it came out that he was on some real fuckery, I would.
What's on some real fuckery?
like partake in lynchings or
not even it doesn't even have to be that bad. Like if he's endorsed, like for example what Charles Dickens did, where he really came to endorse when they massacred loads of Jamaicans on a plantation in Jamaica, mm-hmm. where he really like was like, oh yeah, cool, like we endorse this, you know what I mean, they shouldn't have stepped out of line, that kind of thing. Like, oh,
so your line is, I mean, obviously those times people held racist views, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's more so if they actively did something to perpetuate.
No, it comes down to me sitting down and really thinking about it and thinking, okay, how do I see this? Like, the way I weigh things up in my head is really like, it's utilitarian in nature, enough? The way I kind of weigh up what I think is bad and how many people is harmed, how many people it could have harmed. That's how I really weigh things up. And then I'll drop it out. Like, now I can't read Charles Bukowski anymore because I dropped him out. So I've given all of my Bukowski books away. Do you get me?
Because
I was just like, this guy is a motherfucker. Man. He's not a nice guy. He's horrible.
Yeah.
Do you get me? So yeah, if it gets to that point, then of course someone like Fitzgerald, I'll drop him out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, Ray with her slice trying to come for me every week. Every week she tries it.
Babe, I didn't know
you
such
tried
thing.
It, fam.
I anyway, just am asking you a question.
What about you?
Do you really think that Jane Austen liked black women or black
Possibly
people?
Possibly not. She wrote a book. She wrote. Didn't. Actually, that was Bronte's sister, but...
Yeah, what about the woman in the attic?
Yeah. What about you? What about you? How do you feel about this whole cancel?
I think it's literally about how I feel about what they've done. I don't listen to R. Kelly. I don't listen to Chris Brown. Well, you know what's hard is when Weinstein movies, because I'm a bit like... Oh.
The thing is, I didn't even know who he was too tough. So yeah, all the movies I would have watched, I would have just...
Oh, yeah. That's
so he has mad
That's
that
Pulp
movies.
Fiction and...
That's like, I think even Shakespeare in Love, maybe.
Yeah, that was him.
Yeah, and I'm
a bit... I didn't think about that.
And that's like one of my favourite movies, so...
I mean, it's a YNC. He's got like probably a fingerprint in every film.
Yeah, do you know, a hand in everything. So that's the one I'm literally like, oh, I don't know how I feel about this. And it's very uncomfortable for me.
That's interesting.
But... You know, if Beyonce was to do something crazy,
like what? What would Beyonce have to do? This is the question now. What would Beyonce have to do for Ray to drop her out?
But you know what, right? Beyonce is so well trained that she would never.
As be in caught.
The thought would never happen.
Mm.
As in, it actually won't. But even if it was,
look, man, tell me what
Beyonce can do.
We caught Solange in the lift punching up her husband, and she was standing there.
She was standing
there. Like nothing was happening. So I do believe we could potentially catch her doing something or saying something. It's possible.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you know what I mean?
You gotta sign that non-disclosure.
She was literally in the corner. Like, I'm not. But I don't know. Maybe she'll have to kill someone.
What? What if Beyonce came out, a video came out and someone was like, oh, so, you know, at your concerts, and she says, I really don't like it when women wear headscarves at my concerts.
I'll be like, it's because she thinks that we can't hear her music properly.
Oh, my.
And then she's trying to look out for me.
Oh, you
know,
okay.
She's looking out for me.
Oh, my God.
And then afterwards she'll be like, you know, I'm doing an all women's only for women who wear hijab so that they can actually hear me.
You're actually, Guy, what about you?
It's complex. You know what? I think it's like, you got to accept the struggle part of that. Like, it's not like I enjoy struggling with these things. I think it's okay to just weigh up for the rest of your life, like, you know, like, and also, like, you got to remember, like, sometimes people's art, people's work gets co-opted, like, you know, have you seen Pepe the Frog? You've seen that?
Yeah.
How it's complete, like, the artist, that was just a, have you seen this?
No.
It's like a cartoon of Pepe the Frog, and it became like an internet meme, and it got co-opted by the alt-right.
The frog that's crying.
Crying, doing all sorts, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
And the creator of the frog, he's like, what? Like, I'm a nice guy. And I support Hillary. What's going on? And that's like the badge of the alt-right. So I feel like sometimes that happens. And what do you say then?
Yeah.
You're like, okay, well, the art's mad racist, but the artist is fine. Mm. But that happens both ways. And some of the art, that means so much to me.
That happened.
I would rather not have known anything about the creator.
This is it. So how do you separate the...
And also historically, that shit changes. Like, Ezra Pound was a crazy fascist, but his poetry was a big deal to me.
Yeah.
And you look at the norms of the society in the time. It's just a whole lot of things that you have to juggle.
But just keep struggling with it. I'll think about that for the rest of my life. And also, I don't know about cancelling. I don't know if I would ever cancel anything. I feel like I would read Bukowski and know that, and that's a new feeling. And I'll just have to deal with it. I think that's a good thing.
I think when their personalities though bleed too much into what they're writing. So Bukowski, the way he writes about women, all of that kind of thing, I know that he's really like, so when he's writing it, I can see him with an evil grin on his face, like, yeah, these kids,
you know what I mean? Yeah, but things, I think maybe for me it's monetary. It's so... If I really like your art, I'll probably still consume it, but maybe I won't give you money for it. So I won't make sure that you get paid, but I still will somehow listen. Do you know what I mean?
The thing is, because Chimamanda had that whole thing that went on when she had that conversation.
She answered that at the...
Yeah, but like she had that whole thing and everyone was like, oh, like she's cancelled, she's this, that and the other. And I'm just like, okay, but people will still be talking about
Why are people so scared of complex emotions? Like, you know what I mean? Like, sometimes that's good. At least for me, like, I know that'll come out somehow in something else I make. Like, having to not like someone I loved once. That's a useful emotion.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, to carry with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Well,
I just find it interesting. Because everybody's stepping into the name of love, but nobody wants to listen. No one wants to...
Those songs literally make me feel a bit sick now. Yeah. They definitely do.
You should write about that. Create something.
R. Kelly song that I listen to that I really, really like.
You've got a whole gospel album. I don't know.
This is what I'm saying. I can't listen to R. Kelly singing about making love to someone when I know the circumstances in which he makes love to women in real life. It just makes me feel sick.
Would you listen to his gospel album?
No, because it's a lie, isn't it?
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? Anyway, let's not.
Yeah, that's true. But anyway, yeah. Something to think about.
Yeah.
Mostly flicks.
Oh. Oh, I hate you guys. I can't believe you guys made me watch this fucking
You
movie.
Did not like it.
It's ridiculous.
So, first of all, guys.
Oh my God. I love What Happened to Monday.
This week.
Absolutely ridiculous. Sorry, guys. I was fuming at 3 o'clock in the morning. I was like, I can't.
Why were you watching it so late?
Huh?
Why were you watching it so late?
I told him that you have to watch it.
Yeah, he was like, you have to watch it. I thought, okay, all right, fine.
But yeah, so not on Netflix, there's a film called What Happened to Monday.
Can I get into it, please?
1 second.
I liked it. Look how this
Let me just round up. Let me just say what it is about. It's about seven sisters born at a time
There will be spoilers.
Pardon?
I'm just saying there will be spoilers.
If you want to watch it, pause and then come back. Seven sisters born at a time when
there's
a one-child policy. And they're all named after days of the week.
So,
basically,
this guy had a... is it a daughter who had a daughter who had
seven kids
and
she died in birth,
and he was supposed to incinerate or put to sleep apparently six of them and only raise one, but he chose to name each of them what, like, they obviously they're all identical, so one of them would leave the house each day, they'd assume one identity outside but inside they'd be known by different days of the week.
So firstly, I really thought that the film was just so predictable.
Okay, yeah.
From the beginning, I knew Monday had snaked the thing. I knew it from the beginning.
Did you? Really? Yeah, I didn't.
I knew she snaked. Do you know when I knew she
snaked
it? I
think you're lying.
Oh, when she was flirting with the man.
Do you know how I knew when she snaked it? When the guards rushed the house and my man just pressed the button and was like, come out. I was like, how did you know that I was there? Okay, so Monday snaked it then.
Oh, yeah.
Come out when?
They're hiding inside the cupboard.
Also, I felt like...
But I didn't know why. So I think for me, it was the reason why.
Yeah, I didn't. I thought she was just kind of sick of it at the end of the day.
No.
And also...
Sick of them.
Fam, listen, yeah. I thought like they were caricatures. Like, oh, you've got one of them who's clearly a lesbian. Then you've got the one who's supposed to be
girly. Like,
she's a virgin. You got the girly one. You got the one who loves the geeky gym.
The Sunday was like always the Sunday.
The tech savvy one.
Yeah, but they needed to overtly show the differences. It's the same actress.
Yes, but look, I know what it is. It's just like a movie on Netflix or whatever. Yeah. But whoever created the film, wrote the movie, directed
really
it.
Loved
they
it.
Could have really brought out the personalities of the characters without having these overt things about them. Do you know what I mean?
I get it. You wanted it to be more nuanced.
I thought it was going to be because I saw Willem Dafoe and I thought, okay, so this movie might be a bit.
Nah.
Do you know what I mean? Because he's a great actor and he's in some good movies. I was just like, this is unbelievable.
Well, look at you, all of this emotion. You really liked something.
The finger thing.
Oh, no.
Oh, I liked the finger thing.
I looked away, man. I was like,
I liked the finger thing.
What do you think, guy? What do you think?
The only thing that made me finish this film was my love for you four.
Right?
And you know what? You're doing this film a disservice, though, because...
I really liked it.
You know, your introduction, like the description of this, makes this film sound... like, it's interesting.
Yeah.
It's entirely whack.
Oh, come on. on, guy.
Everything about this was terrible.
Yeah, there was a point where,
I watched it on a Sunday, and Sundays are maybe my trash film days. And I think I was in the mood.
That's fine. Yeah, totally.
You know what I mean? I was in the mood to. It's one of those films that you watch when you have your like dinner and you don't want to have it on the table, so you have it in your bed.
It's not even
your laptop.
It's not even plausible. Like,
oh no, come on.
But even if it's not plausible, it's weird and interesting. It's Willem Dafoe, isn't it? Okay, yeah. On paper, I'd watch this.
Yeah.
A second in, I'm like, nope. Never.
No, the thing is,
I like the fighting scenes.
I think as soon as he said, like, oh, what are you gonna name them? And I was like, oh. Then I realized that there were seven. I was like, oh. And then it was like, name them one day after the week. And I was like, okay, well, this is just. I just maintained the energy through the film.
I was just like,
I find it interesting.
You guys have a lot of vim and energy against it, which means that it did something right.
Yeah. I don't like Glenn Close. In things. Is it Glenn Close?
Yeah.
I don't like her in things.
Why?
I don't know. I think does she always play a villain?
I liked her in Guardians of the Galaxy.
She played the exact similar
role. Was she in Guardians of the Galaxy?
I think she was.
She was the head of the
See? The universe police people.
Yeah.
I don't like her face. Her face looks like Xandarians. Gone wrong. I don't know. It's just
pasta gone wrong.
I know. Like,
it's amazing.
I don't know. It's just weird. Like, I don't like her face. Something about her face makes
me feel.
She doesn't
always play a villain. You're just thinking of 101 Dalmatians.
No, I'm thinking 101 Dalmatians. Oh, yeah. I'm thinking of What's the other one with the bunny boiler?
No, it's not even that.
What's that one with the bunny boiler?
Is Glenn Close in The Devil Wears Prada? Is that her?
Yeah. Oh, no, that's Meryl Streep.
That's
Meryl Streep.
But this is why I feel bad for her, because she's just not Meryl Streep.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel like she must have been up for all
maybe
the roles.
Maybe she's like Meryl Streep's understudy in everything.
Sucks to be
her,
man.
In Death Becomes Her. That's Meryl Streep.
Wow.
She's in the bunny boiler one. What's it called?
What bunny boiler one?
Babes, it's all right.
Look,
don't
who
worry.
Who framed Roger Rabbit? No. Is it Roger Rabbit?
Who framed Roger Rabbit? Nah.
Every time there's a bunny boiler.
I feel like it's not Roger Rabbit.
No, it's where the term bunny boiler comes from.
Is it Roger Rabbit?
It's Roger Rabbit. Okay, it's where the term bunny boiler comes from. I forgot what it's called. But anyway, she's in a relationship with this man. He's having an affair with her. And then she kind of infiltrates back into his family life. And then she starts doing madness in the family. Taking the kid out to on holiday. Fatal Attraction, that's it. She's taking the kid out to like the park, and they're like, where's the child?
I searched her name and Meryl Streep also comes up.
See, she looks like Meryl Streep. She's similar, you know. And then obviously there's a point where she's killing the bunny in the pot. Bunny boiler.
Oh, she's in Air Force One.
So is there any redeeming quality to
this film?
This plot is really great, and maybe they need to redo it differently, but I love the plot. I love the premise.
I enjoyed the fact it was European.
I'm not American. How do you enjoy that? Like, how do you go about enjoying that? I enjoyed the fact that
I was watching.
You know,
are you watching a Europe?
From.
Yeah, I was watching a European film and not an American one.
Yeah,
weird.
Like reading a British novelist.
I didn't want to see Americanisms. I wanted to hear her accent. I wanted to see. We know we're talking about the European Commission and the European.
That's true. There was a lot of different.
It was
European
Europe.
Accents.
I was like, okay.
It was
rainy. Stuff, but like, I mean, otherwise, yeah, man. And I thought the film was interesting.
I really thought it was going to be about something else. The name kind of sounds interesting.
I thought they would all win, and then the fact that most of them ended up just dying.
I'm not gonna lie, I thought it was about time travel. When you like, oh, let's watch, look what happened.
I thought that
was the Monday, yeah. I thought it was about time travel.
Yeah.
Why would you think it's about time travel?
I don't know, it just the name just rings
time
travel.
Did you read the description before you press play?
No, yeah. I didn't.
Because that's what I do, yeah.
I didn't either. I just went
anyways,
cold.
So next week we're totally choosing a different type of film.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool.
That's cool, though.
Yeah. So
you guys didn't rate it.
Conclusion.
Ray, have you got any issues?
Yes, I do have an issue, and I'm going to take it all the way to the dark, stormy, realist reality of the world that we live in today. So I don't know if you guys know, but... The UK, the US and France have decided to put all their armies together and once again be involved in a war and bomb Syria. I don't know if you guys know. I mean, I hope you do know and you watch the bloody news. But there's been chemical sort of weapons used in Syria with regards to the sort of civil civil strife in the country and loads of issues within the Damascus regime. And the chemical weapons used has incited the outside Western world to get involved. And I think that it's an absolute shitty way to go about solving the death of lives by causing more deaths of lives. I think it's absolutely bizarre. And I think it happened Friday, yesterday, where they decided to... I kind of smiled because it's such a terrible thing. But I read on the FT that they were careful not to hit any Iranian or Russian places because they didn't want more international woes, just sort of internal ones. And I thought
they don't want it with Putin,
right? They don't want to come. They don't want to go there at all. And I thought that was just added a more disgusting layer on it. I just want to know what you guys think. What Britain specifically should be doing in this situation?
Boy, I don't even know, because I'm looking around and I think we're on the brink of what is it, World War III? And people aren't...
Man, we ain't even on the brink of no World War
III. And people aren't even phased. But I don't know. I don't know what to expect. I don't know what to expect anymore from these people. It's just so commonplace.
I don't even know what's going on, to be fair. I don't think we're on the brink of World War III. I think that's just taking a bit far.
Okay, it's dramatic, it's me.
But I do think that we are now, like, desensitized. So I was watching...
Precisely.
I was watching, you know, whatever happened to Monday or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I saw the announcement. So I had to pause that, and then I was just reading my Twitter feed. I'm telling you, fam, people are just busting joke about it.
Yeah.
They're really just making jokes. They want to be the first one to write a quick collect their retweets and their favorites and stuff. Like, it's like no one really, really cares. I'm telling you, Donald Trump is a lunatic. It really baffles me that he's in the way. It's fucking weird, man. Honestly. And I always say this, like, I'm telling you, we care more about democracy than we do our own fucking lives, bro. It's so bizarre to me. I'm telling you, if Trump says, okay, I'm going to bomb Russia, the fact that there's a possibility that we'll let him do it is weird to me. It's crazy, bro. You know what I mean? When this is a fucking... The road, that book by Cormac McCarthy. Yeah. When the world is like that, yeah, are we going to be looking at each other? Well, at least we kept up our fucking democracy.
I think ideals matter so much more than actual lives, which is just insane. What do you think, guy?
There's a bunch. But like, the immediate thing is, okay, this is a one-shot thing. Mm. Like, they've bombed Homs and Damascus, specific targets. But this isn't like the, you know, okay, I don't know if you saw like the images that came out of like the babies and stuff, children that were killed. What this is it isn't like we're so morally moved that we should do something. Mm. This is like, we told you not to do this because you did this 2 years ago, did it again, so we're going to punish you.
Yeah.
This is a punishment. Mm. It isn't supposed to do anything.
A peaceful coming together and trying to get to the problem, an actual democratic solution.
And also, no one, because what's supposed to happen, if usually Parliament's supposed to vote on whether to do this or not. There was no vote. They just did it. But most of the time, this is like telling Russia that, okay, you might think that the UK and the US and France aren't talking, aren't friends anymore, but we are. Mm-hmm. This is all it is. It's a statement. We're going to punish the thing. We're going to do the thing that we said we were going to do, although it's arbitrary. Yeah. Like, it isn't supposed to do anything.
To show you guys how powerful we are. And then let's add on some sanctions to some Russian oligarchs to make it even worse. It's just ridiculous.
I don't know. It's crazy.
But it is, like, I do agree with Derek on the fact that it's gotten to the point where we see it, we might retweet it to show the world, we are so shocked. And then we go about our day. But there isn't an actual strength to actually make a difference now. I think the age of revolution, per se, is gone. We are so... we just want our own individual peace, whatever form that may be in. And we just don't care. And I think that is so worrying.
It's like a lot of the things, you just look at it, I think people do, and think it's not my battle.
Us, yeah.
Or it's not my war. And Where's the humanity? I know that's the thing. For example, you're going to have people that are going to fight for identities.
Yeah,
and revolt based on identities.
Yeah,
and
identity. I mean, everyone's a multiple, so that identity could, like in the US. I mean, it's kind of a problem that it is an identitarian. In the US, like the young people are actually doing something about gun control and legislation around gun control, but it isn't based on the amount of a certain community being gunned down. It's the identity that they've chosen to go around with is youth. I'm a young person, so this matters to me. You know what I mean? It doesn't have to be the one thing that you're, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't the revolution like that isn't dead. It's not gone. It's just we're choosing not to.
If we're choosing not to, then it's not, and nothing is going to happen.
Yeah, that's the problem. And this is why the world is this way.
Exactly.
But Britain's always been safe, though. Like, safe. They've always had the ideology of just safety. Like, oh, we're just going to toe in line, keep calm and carry on.
Okay, so it's an interesting way to think about it is, so I used to do documentaries, and most of them was human rights documentaries. Mm-hmm. And I traveled around to, like, places like Southeast Asia, like my parents from Sri Lanka, so I went over there, did a documentary about the civil war there. Then I went to certain places, the governments and politics have a different relationship. So most of the time, and this is a mad generalization, I did one in northern Uganda, and it's the same thing there. In some countries, the government is seen as like a benefactor. Right? Like a father figure. Most of the time it's a father. Like, so the government's supposed to take care of you and you just know your role. But I mean, usually it was in the West, especially in this country, governments were supposed to be, we have the power, we're just loaning it to you. So if you do something wrong, we're going to vote you out. But now it's switched. Now we're so passive. We kind of think, oh yeah, no, whoever's up there will take care of us. It's all good.
People in parliament didn't vote for this, I thought should have gained much more traction from the people. But the fact that they weren't given that right is like, and we just allowed it. Nobody's talking about it. There's like an article floating around here and there. And that really illustrates how passive and subservient we've become.
And that's, I mean, to say that, okay, that's not us anymore, that's abdication of responsibility. It is down to you. It's totally down to you.
That's how Britain's always been there.
And you could march. There are things you could do. You could sign up to newsletters. You can go to marches. Nice. Grenfell was the thing, man. There's a march tonight. You can actually go.
Yeah.
So you can actually, you know, you could do things.
Yeah.
So it is just down to
being in the know. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, sorry to bring a downer to
sorry,
the
guys.
It's not a downer. But
it fucking is a downer. It
makes you think about stuff.
Yeah. It's what we should be doing.
Unless you let think about stuff.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Okay.
All right. Anyway, come to the end of the show. Come to the end of the
Thank
road.
Thank you so much for coming on, Guy.
Thank you, Guy.
I'm really excited.
No, look,
for your
book. You guys don't
really
understand
well.
How important you are. I think you don't. All four of you don't know how important you are to the British publishing. Mostly are actually really important. All four of you are
Thank
all
you.
That are very deserved of all these awards and accolades that come in your way.
Thank you.
It's very rare, and you should know it.
Oh,
everyone who's watching it who listen to this understands what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Oh, so
thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Where can they find you?
Yes.
Twitter. My name on Twitter. That's
okay.
It.
Okay. Cool.
And guys, please don't forget to vote.
Yeah, vote. Listener's choice.
Listener's choice, the British podcast.
It's on the website, mostly-lit.com.
Please.
Remember to rate, review, and subscribe.
Subscribe, please,
to
leave
our
comments.
Link.
Great.
Subscribe. Awesome. Rate and review to
Thanks,
our stuff.
Shady.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for coming on, guys. Cheers.
Thank you.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.